Hi, I'm Stephanie Marland, and welcome back to the My Little Eye podcast. My Little Eye is my new thriller coming out on the 5th of April about a group of true crime addicts who meet online and attempt to catch a serial killer before the police. So what better reason to put together an online crime podcast series? In each episode, I'll be chatting with expert guests about murder, crime, and the facts behind the fiction. Today, I'm joined by crime and thriller book blogger Emma Mitchell from emmathelittlebookworm.wordpress.com. In this episode, Emma's going to be asking me some questions about my books. So, take it away, Emma.
Hello. So, the plot for My Little Eye is so, so brilliant and unique. Where did you find the inspiration for it?
Well, I was fascinated by, you know, things like Making a Murderer and the Serial podcast. And I can remember getting together for a drink with a crime writer friend of mine, James Law. And we were kind of talking about the kind of rise of blogging and vloggers and podcasts and all the kind of true crime type TV stuff. And sort of wondering about, you know, what that was going to lead to. Because there seem to be increasing numbers of crime and cold case kind of TV shows and podcasts coming up. And so we were sort of, you know, big conspiracy theorists, kind of, you know, you have a few drinks and you kind of get more and more far-fetched. Yeah. And we kind of got to the point, well, you know, what if somebody decided they could actually do this better than the police? What if they got kind of bored of the cold case stuff and wanted to try it for real? Could it happen? How would it happen? And I was kind of hypothesizing about all this stuff. And in the end, he kind of said, yeah, you should write that. And so I kind of had the idea and I wrote it down on my phone, I think, on the train on the way home, slightly sloshed. And then a few months later, started writing it. And that's kind of where it came from.
That's where it came from. Fantastic. So it's like you say, though, I mean, me, along with a million other people, became an overnight lawyer after watching Making a Murderer on Netflix and watched crime dramas thinking I'm a forensic expert and screaming at the telly, that shouldn't happen like that, I should be doing this. So do you think these types of programmes impact on the on-world line, the online world of crime fighting?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think it sort of raised the profile of it a lot.
Definitely.
And as I said, like, the, you know, increasing number of podcasts and forums springing up. And when I was writing My Little Eye, I did quite a lot of research looking at true crime forums. And there's mainly in America, actually, there's masses of them in America. And actually in some of the states, some of the kind of smaller counties, they actually, the police are actually engaging some of these true crime fans. So they're actually posting up kind of cold case, like very cold case, sort of descriptions, and in some cases sharing some of the evidence with them and getting them to kind of, you know, engage with that and seeing if they can harness the power of these kind of true crime addicts. So I was really fascinated in this. So yeah, and I think the other thing that I was thinking about when I was just kind of looking at it was, you know, what else is out there as well as podcasts and TV and these forums. And there's a couple of companies now where they actually do a kind of, you know, like these box subscriptions that sort of spring up, where they do a box subscription around finding the murderer. So each month they send you a new box and it has new evidence in, and you have to try and piece together who did the crime.
Yeah,
basically. So they're
that
kind of fiction,
fantastic.
But you're actively part of the investigation.
Yeah. There's a WhatsApp one out at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah.
That looks interesting.
Yeah. So there's, the kind of where it's all done in chat, the whole story's done in a kind of chat form. Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah, loads of really creative stuff out there.
So, speaking of online searches, if you were arrested for a crime, what would be the most incriminating thing the police would find on your PC?
Well, I am a crime writer, so there's quite a lot of dodgy searches, I think. I mean, it's so relating to My Little Eye, things like how much anaesthetic would you have to inject into someone to kill them?
Is that doll locked?
Definitely on there. I did an online course in forensics, so there's quite a lot of stuff around blood splatter patterns from different implements, which is quite, you
gruesome
know, gruesome.
Bizarre.
Yeah. I looked at quite a few videos on YouTube about how to pick different kind of locks, different of locks.
Wow.
So there's that. And yeah, and kind of a whole, I often just Google, you know, how could you break into X? Or, you know,
yeah,
you know, ways to get from here to here undetected and just see what see what comes up.
Where are the CCTV cameras?
Exactly. Yeah. 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 So there's quite, there's probably, yeah, I would definitely be in a, yeah, in dodgy, in
sticky dodgy, trouble.
Yeah. Dodgy ground, definitely.
So Clementine Stark, amazing character. She's brilliant. I absolutely fell in love with her pretty much from the off.
Oh, thank you.
She's wonderfully complex and brilliant. When did you create her? Did she kind of come to accommodate the book, or was the book accommodating hers?
I created Dom first. So okay. Dom was a character I'd written a couple of scenes with, which are actually the Operation Atlantis scenes in the book,
yeah,
that I'd written first. And I knew that I wanted, I kind of had this idea of this kind of very reclusive younger woman,
yeah,
who, you know, who was battling with demons in her past, who kind of couldn't move past it. She'd kind of let her past inhibit her life for over 10 years and kind of was in a pretty dark place, yeah, but wanted to break out of that place. So I kind of had that idea, but I didn't really have her voice. And it took, I think it took sort of 3 or 4 drafts to get, to kind of get the right voice.
Right.
And I kind of wrote, I think the very first draft I did of the book, I wrote both her and Dom's part of the book. And then I actually did the second draft where I kept most of Dom's part of the book and threw away Clementine and rewrote her totally.
Right.
Because, you know, as you know, because you've read it, she doesn't, she's at the beginning of the book, she's numb. She doesn't feel emotion in the same way that people do because of what's happened to her.
Yeah.
And it's quite difficult to write a character that is kind of, you know, sort of reclusive yet dynamic and non-feeling, and yet you feel kind of empathy for,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
So to try and get that balance was difficult. And then one day, I think I was probably in the bath. I'm normally in the bath, and I kind of just had had one or two lines come to me, and it was the, you know, they tell me I was dead for however many seconds it is,
yeah,
but I don't know if that's true. All I know is, and it was just that, and I thought, yeah, that's her.
That's
the voice. That's the voice I need to do. Yeah. And so then I rewrote the book entirely with that voice.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
So it took a while. I knew what I wanted, but to find it took a while.
Yeah.
To find the right tone.
And the tone, brilliant. She's definitely one of my favourite characters. I can't wait to see more from her. If I kind of see her as an Emma Watson, if it was a movie, and Belle as Idris Elba, who would you cast if it was a movie?
Well, yeah, I mean, both of them sound great, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, I love Emma Watson's work, and Idris Elba is amazing in anything he does, so, you know.
I'm on a Luther kick at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, looks-wise, I suppose for Clementine, I kind of had a sort of, you probably don't know her, but Aubrey Peebles, she's an American actress, sort of in her mid-20s. But also someone like Maisie Williams. She's kind of a little bit younger than Clementine, but she could totally play that role. She would be amazing.
Again, similar to Emma Watson, that kind of little petite, look at them and think that they're not quite what they are,
yes,
but then totally complex.
Yeah, so I reckon her. And then, and when I was writing Dominic West was the guy that I kind of had in mind for D.I. Bell. Although, you know, I obviously totally could go for Idris.
And then, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Exactly. So, yeah.
You touched on some sort of strong subjects within your writing and within your genre. Is there any topic that you wouldn't write about?
I don't know. So far, I haven't really shied away from anything that I've had the idea for. I don't like kind of gratuitous violence, kind of where it's graphic for the sake of it.
Yes.
So I tend to kind of shy away a bit from that, mm-hmm. I think. And I suppose the one place I wouldn't really go is, you know, to anything that mirrors a tragedy in the recent past.
Okay.
I just think, you know, I know some authors do go there and they handle it very sensitively and it works really yeah. well. But I just, for me, I'm not sure. I would be very worried about whether I could do it
yeah.
justice in a sensitive way enough. So
yeah.
so for me, I would kind of steer clear of that.
But other than that, anything goes.
Yeah, probably. I'll tell you if I find something that I'm yeah. like, oh, no.
So what are you doing now then? What's happening? Are we going to see Stark and Bell back?
Yes, we are. So at the moment, I am editing the second book in the series.
Eek.
So, eek. Yes. Yes. So I'm, so, yep. So I finished the first draft end of last year and have got my editor's notes back. So, yeah. So I'm kind of working on that at the moment.
Is that going to be this year, do we think? Is it?
Oh, I'm not sure. I imagine maybe a similar pattern to how this has been, but we haven't talked about it.
I want to know. But they are definitely coming back, the readers.
They're coming back, yeah.
Because I know from a lot of the people that I've chatted online about it, desperate to see more of them.
Excellent.
Really love the chemistry yeah. between them and that idea of the non-officer working with the police
yeah.
and doing it so well. It's a genius idea.
Brilliant. Oh, thank you.
No, it's really good.
Well, you know, a huge thank you to you, Emma, for coming in and interviewing me about My Little sure. Eye. Be sure to join me next week for another episode of the My Little Eye podcast. But first, here's a short extract from the audiobook, which is available to buy now.
This morning, things got interesting. I'm one coffee and two cigarettes into my day when the news hits Twitter. It's 5:42. Streetlights reveal the cluttered pavement of St. John Street on bin day, but not the sprawling extent of its filth. From my attic room four floors above, I watch the meat lorries trundle past on their way to Smithfield Market, then turn back to my laptop and reread the tweet. At Deathstalker. The lover strikes again. Woman's body found near Angel, blue lights on scene. Taking a long drag on my cigarette, I watch the retweets continue to rise. 4, 9, 13, 21. True crime fans never sleep. They're always waiting for a new case, another body. A fresh hit of adrenaline. Fantasists, most of them. Most, but I don't think all. I stub the cigarette out in the overflowing ashtray and reach for the keyboard. I click the shortcut to Crime Stop, the specialist social networking site for true crime fans. The homepage loads. Its logo, a blood-spattered microscope, is as familiar to me as the people who inhabit this virtual space. The icon in the corner of my screen shows 23 notifications. I click to read the alerts. Deathstalker posted in True Crime London. Mystery solved, Blood City, and 20 others commented on a post in True Crime London. I click the first alert, and it takes me to the private area for London-based crime fans. Deathstalker's post tops the feed. Breaking news. The lover strikes a third time. My inside source says dead woman's appearance was totally changed. Rose petals found around the body. Has London's lover struck again? My images attached. There are three photos. The quality isn't great, but they're geotagged. The first is the outside of a building. Terraced red brick flats above a takeaway. Crime scene tape has been strung along the pavement outside. The others are exterior shots too. One is the doorway. Three stone steps leading to a black door, the number 43, above the brass doorknob. The other shows the first floor window. I double-click the image, enlarging it, but curtains block any glimpse of the interior. There's no caption, but that doesn't matter. It's easy enough to guess what these photos mean. Deathstalker, the unofficial leader of the True Crime London group, is at the scene of the crime. I reread the post and wonder who the inside source is. Glancing at the avatar beside Deathstalker's username, the outline of a face, the photo too dark to make out any features or even their gender, I wonder who they are. young or old, male or female. Online, you can be anyone you want. Flicking back to the first photo, I zoom in, focusing on the reflection in the window of the takeaway. Behind the light flare from the flash, just visible, is the outline of a person. My heart rate quickens. The picture is too dark to make out much detail, but from their silhouette, I can be sure of two things. First, the photographer is wearing a hoodie. And secondly, Deathstalker is a man. I see you. Reaching over last night's Thai takeaway carton for my journal, I jot down the wording of Deathstalker's posts and the points of interest from the photographs. I note the details of the figure reflected in the window, and beside it I write, gender reveal, intentional or accident? If it's an error, then it's the first I've seen him make, and I've been watching for a while. It's 19 months since I first gathered data for my doctoral study. Back then, CrimeStop was one of many websites on my list, and true crime fans were just people I used in order to explore my hypothesis, that no matter what gossip might be spread across the internet, in reality, crowdsourced crime solving would never be achievable. True Crime London made me rethink all that. Specifically, Deathstalker caused my rethink. He knows things the public shouldn't, with access to protected data from contacts close to the investigations. He has the case information gathered by the police, but without the bureaucracy and protocols that hamper them. It gives him and anyone working with him the chance to solve a crime faster than the police. Now a new question inhabits my mind. Could this group of true crime fans solve a live murder case? I think they have the potential to, and I think some of them believe that too. In the months I've been watching, several members of the group have talked about taking on the challenge of a live case. Every time another incidence of police incompetence or corruption hits the media, the debate is had again. Each time the lover has killed, the conversations have turned more serious. The likes are increasing on Deathstalker's original post. Interest is rising. I copy the geotag into Google Maps, and it zooms in on a side road near the back end of Islington High Street. It's a more daring choice of kill site, an area busy with foot traffic and cars most times of the day and night. The lover is getting bolder. There have been two murders in the last 4 weeks, one in Camden, the other in Crouch End. Two women are dead, both found in their bedrooms with the lights dimmed, candles burning, and rose petals scattered around their naked bodies. Now, 6 days after the second murder, it seems there's been a third. The kills are increasing in frequency.